9:14 on a Friday. Boy, I like the sound of that. Friday, and it's July 12th. We're with the Roundtable panel. Hi, I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue. With us this morning, former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College and president of Beyond Plastic, Judith Enck. Stand up.
Good morning.
Good morning, Judith.
It's been a long 2 weeks.
It sure has been a long 2 weeks.
Just like 2 years.
Oh, boy, we haven't even started, and I feel like we've been through the ringer. The Ulster County Comptroller and former president and CEO of the Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, March Gallagher, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad to be here in person with all these great minds.
Absolutely. Not to mention CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Mulligan. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling good. I was on time. I'm really proud of myself. I told these guys I expected a standing ovation, but... I imagine Joe is going to be mad that the one time he's not here is the only time I'm ever on time.
Well, but does this mean that you're getting to bed before 8 o'clock at night?
No. No. I stayed up.
But we missed the photo op opportunity. We should have had Heather standing in front of the clock pointing at 9:02.
No question. I mean, I'm totally lost on this. I didn't realize you were a latecomer most times. So
usually about by 3 minutes. I mean, it's pathetic, really.
Well, you know what? You got to work on that. But yeah. Heather, you made it today.
We're
happy about that.
Right, yeah.
We want to let our audience know you can join us by emailing the panel at panel@wamc.org. Here's the real rub here. Keep your letters short, to the point, and on topic. Don't include links or attachments. Don't use abbreviations. And proofread your emails before you send. Well, I think that takes care of everything. Now, panel,
Nothing to talk about.
There's really nothing to talk about. I unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, have to get up so early in the morning. I can't stay up to watch it. And it was delayed. I tried to sit there at 6:30 and they're pushing it back and they're pushing it. No. But you have all seen what happened last night. I've, of course, read and seen some of the clips. Why don't we start with you, Judith? What's your reaction to what happened? We've seen some more people call for him to step down. We've seen others sort of bolster and say, hey, he's showing he has a big command of foreign policy, at least. What do you make of it?
Well, I think the president was exceptional in terms of his command of foreign policy, and it's a reminder that he is very experienced on the foreign stage. So that was a comfortable setting for him in front of NATO. I can't quite imagine Donald Trump standing in front of all these international leaders. That said, we all were holding our breath through the entire hour. I do want to point out that, and I didn't point this out, Kelly O'Donnell, the head of the White House Correspondents Association, pointed out that this was President Biden's first standalone news conference with the White House press corps in a year. In a year. Oh, my goodness. It is such a reminder that the Biden senior staff were shielding him from the press and from the public. We now know why. So that was unfortunate. BBC this morning, led with the two gaffes, and they were significant. I feel bad for, President Biden was introducing President Zelensky from Ukraine and referred to him as Vladimir Putin. Imagine how the president of Ukraine, that guy's having such a challenging time.
Yeah, if you're going to flub, that's the worst one possible.
He corrected himself.
Yes. Yeah.
It took Biden
It took a few seconds, but it was like, oh, that's debate Biden. I think it doesn't move the needle either way. It was similar to the ABC interview with George Stephanopoulos. But this campaign cannot be about us holding our breaths for the next 4 months. I remember the Obama campaign where you were inspired, and it was much watched TV on Tuesday nights, watching the primary results and then watching his speeches during the general election. We are so far from that. And I think, everyone saw what they saw last night. If you believe Biden should stay in the race, you got some confirmation there. If you thought the gaffes were significant, you got some confirmation there. There's definitely a lot of confirmation bias going on. And in listening to the commentators afterwards, one of them made such a good point. Immediately after the debate performance, those of us who believe that Biden needs to drop out, and we can get into why I think that, we were all scolded immediately that you should not be challenging whether the president stays in or not, and trying to kind of stifle people sharing their concerns. You don't do that with Democrats. By definition, Democrats fight all the time about everything. And that's what leads to better decision making. I think that's why primaries are good. You vet candidates, you hear about positions. And then the final point is all of this discussion of whether Biden is capable or not means we're not talking about climate change. We're not talking about housing. We're not talking about health care. We're not talking about how kids who just got out of college are just so burdened with debt. And I think there's an obligation to push this presidential campaign back to discussing some issues, as opposed to who dislikes Trump more and who dislikes Biden more.
March.
I agree with Judith completely. I do not think this changed the needle. I think people who were supportive of him remaining in the race could take away, and people who were concerned, like I am, could take away what they needed to. It is actually his fourth solo press conference during his term. That compares to 18 by Obama at this stage in his presidency and 13 by Bush in his presidency, but only 2 by Donald Trump during his presidency. So I think we're seeing a change in the way presidents are made available to the public and are speaking in an unscripted way. And in part, that is because, you know, we have some competency issues that staff is concerned about. I think the debate really showed for Democrats how the rallying cries on the right and in the conservative arc that Biden may have a fitness issue came as a huge surprise to people. And I know, like for me, at my kitchen table, I've been arguing with my husband for months. He had been making these points. I was disregarding them. And the debate really set things alight for me that I had to kind of face facts that Biden is 81. You know, he's the age of my father. And we're talking about him serving another 4 years after the close of 2024. And really, that brings me to the place where I say, no matter what we do in this election, if we elect a Biden-Harris ticket, we are saying that Kamala Harris could be the next president and is likely to be the next president during this coming term. My feeling is it would legitimize her candidacy, her leadership, if we bite the bullet and do it now. And I also want to say I see these congressional leaders and other leaders like the lieutenant governor coming out and speaking their minds. You know, my congressman, Congressman Pat Ryan. I want people to know that is an incredibly challenging and difficult thing for those elected leaders to do. I said it the day after the debate that I thought we should have an open convention, and I got absolutely hammered in my personal messages. But I felt like I'm not up for election. You know, I have the opportunity to speak my mind. People like me need to do it. They know they're taking a huge risk. And none of those elected Democrats in the House who are speaking out want to be on the opposite side of the next president of the United States. So they have made a judgment. And they believe that no matter what, President Biden will not be in service come 2025. And I think that's a really, really serious position that people are taking. They know they're taking a huge risk, and they're doing it because they think it's important for the health of the country.
What do you think, listeners? Panel at WAMC.org. We just heard from Judith and March, and now Heather.
Hi.
You're the last, but you're not late.
No, I was on time. No, so a couple things I wanted to add, and I generally agree with Judith and March. And I think first, I think he did well at the first part of the press conference, but he was reading off of a teleprompter, right? And he can really stay smooth and presidential when he's reading off a teleprompter. When he went to the Q&A part, much choppier. You know, you really... Now, he did a lot better than he did at the debate, but gosh, don't I wish that they had focused on foreign policy at the debate, because this is his strong suit, right? This is where he's got the experience. And I mean, if you were to do a side by side on some of these questions between him and Trump, you would really see pretty stark differences. But that's a missed opportunity that, you know, it maybe if he does stay on the ticket and they have another debate, maybe they'll do some foreign policy stuff, because I know Trump would say, oh yeah, I'm really good on foreign policy. I'm best friends with Vladimir Putin. I get along with Xi, you know, so.
And Viktor Orban.
Right. But the other big miss, I think, is, you know, if he really was concerned not about his presidency as much as the future of the country, he would have done a lot more to boost up Kamala Harris. And he didn't. He didn't at all. In fact, he did almost the opposite. A few times, you know, he was asked a direct question about, you know, would you kind of be okay? And his answer was like, that's not going to happen. You know, and the first time, the first gaffe in the questions related to her, he was asked, do you think she's qualified to be president? And he started off saying she was selected as VP. And then he said Donald Trump or Vice President Trump. Mm-hmm. And then he quickly kind of reversed course and said, and he's clearly not qualified. So it was kind of a missed opportunity, but B, also a gaffe. I know we're all looking for the gaffes now because of, you know, the concerns about his acuity. I don't think he did anything to alleviate those concerns in particular. I know, you know, personally that let's just put it out there, assuming that this maybe is early stage Parkinson's or Parkinson's, one of the hallmarks is, you know, sort of not being able to focus when asked questions, but having really good days and bad days, depending on whether or not you have a fever or, you know, if you have a fever, you can become very disoriented with Parkinson's. I'm not saying that he has it, but I'm saying, you know, there is something to be concerned about when you have this vast difference between two performances that are relatively close in time. And I guess my third thing that I would say is, and it has nothing to do with the presentation last night, but somewhere in the last few days, Donald Trump basically said something along the lines like, well, I think Biden should stay in. Well, I think that's all we need to know, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Trump and his people were praising Biden's performance last
sarcastically.
Night.
Sarcastically.
Yeah, yeah, well, they really want him to stay in because they're reading the same polls that others are, that in swing states, Trump beats Biden.
And that's where he needs to.
And
yeah.
It has been consistent. This is not new. Pre-debate, Biden was behind Trump in swing states, and it's only getting worse.
But you know the administration is going to use the latest NPR PBS Marist College poll that finds Biden leading 50-48% among registered voters nationally. Yes, not the
Doesn't
swing
matter.
States. Slight improvement from last month's deadlock. But you can see him, you know, he's grinding his feet in. He's holding on as hard as he can. He's not budging. And they're going to use this poll as an example of why he shouldn't.
Right. And national polls do not matter. There was an article in Politico a few days ago that New York may be becoming a swing state.
That's right. What
I find inconsistent is, and he was asked about it last night, you know, first of all, you know, people are always asking about polls, and he's saying that polls are not always accurate. That is true. But these are consistent polls, pre-debate, swing voters, independents in swing states saying he is too old. People have seen this. Voters are ahead of where members of Congress are. So the president last night is saying the polls are wrong. And then when really pressed at the end, who's going to convince you to get out? He said the only person who would convince him is his pollster, who will show him numbers that he can't beat Trump and that someone else has a better shot at being Trump.
Right. Not even that Kamala Harris could do better. He won't step back if the polls show she could do better than him. He needs to see that he is slated to lose. I want to go back to something Heather was talking about the administration really not shining a light on Kamala Harris's abilities and using her in a strategic way over the last 3.5 years. He did note last night her forceful role in rallying the country on reproductive rights and that she's a heck of a prosecutor. It made me wonder how many presidents have been prosecutors, by the way. Two. two presidents, mm-hmm. Polk and McKinley, have been prosecutors. So I think that's a rare trait.
I forgot about Polk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who are concerned about that. You have a lot of people on the Democratic side who are nervous about having a prosecutor there. But in this case, given the candidate on the other side, it might be very useful to have a prosecutor debating Trump and being out in the field speaking about the issues that we have. And let me also say, Biden spoke about his success in getting major legislation done, and that has been really tremendous. I mean, just an amazing swath of legislation over the term of his presidency, including, healthcare issues like lowering the prices of insulin, 15 million new jobs, bringing manufacturing back, the infrastructure bill, forgiving debt, expanding NATO. Those are all amazing strategic things that have happened during his presidency, including his work on Capitol Hill. And, Kamala Harris doesn't have that experience, but she has other experience that I think is not being highlighted.
She's
enough.
Also a woman. And in that debate, when they asked him about abortion, he trailed off and ended with the immigration. I mean, there was a softball of all softballs that would have been knocked out of the park by Kamala Harris.
And the climate change question.
No question.
When asked about climate change, the only thing Biden needed to say, one thing, and he could have remembered this without notes. Donald Trump told the fossil fuel executives, give me $1 billion. I'll do whatever you want on climate change. And he didn't even bring it up.
We have to run over to the BBC. We're going to come back with more discussion. Okay. Panel at WAMC.org. Coming up on 9:34 on a Friday, you're listening to the Roundtable Panel on WAMC. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue. The music is Betty Smith's new album, Good Thing. Playlist is posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. Please join our discussion this morning by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. With us is Judith Enck, Marge Gallagher, and Heather Mulligan. We're really starting to get into it. That darn BBC interrupted us. But obviously, the issue that has been taking up all or most of our time is this presidential race, and specifically questions about the fitness, in one case, of President Biden. On the Media Project this week, guys, we talked about this. And Barbara Lombardo, who's a former editor, publisher, the editor of the Saratogian, said, my dander's up here. Because if there's one person that's truly unfit, it's former President Donald Trump. And we're using energy, this vim and vigor that he has as a test of fitness, when in the end, as our former CEO used to say, he's a lying liar. And any plans that he has, or let's just talk about some of those plans for a moment, like we know what they're planning to do if he gets into office. What is it called?
2020?
Project 2025.
Project
2025. The
Heritage Foundation.
I mean, this really isn't a question of whose character and integrity is the best. It's really all about a person's age.
But we knew that Trump was not with it, that his positions are horrible, that he consistently lies. He's a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. We knew that. And so what happens now, we have this dynamic where it's drip, drip, drip on Biden, and we're not getting to talk about Trump. And, the headline this morning is, Biden didn't completely screw up the news conference, but it really should be about Trump welcoming Viktor Orban, the dreadful president of Hungary, to Mar-a-Lago. I mean, how disrespectful. The NATO leaders are in Washington, D.C., and he's doing like a little alternative viewing out of Florida. But see, this is what's going to happen if Biden stays in. And I don't blame the press for this because I think they feel duped like we feel duped. It's going to be almost, a death watch looking for the next Biden mistake. And there will be many more, and they will be close to the November election. And it takes attention away from how negative Donald, that's the nicest way I could say this, how negative Donald Trump will be in his unleashed second term.
Judith, is it somewhat ironic that the one thing that will catch both of these guys in the end is their egos?
Oh, it's politics. You don't get to.
You don't think Joe Biden's ego is involved
here? Of course it is. You don't get to be president.
We know Trump has an ego three times anybody else's.
They both do.
But he's using that right now to say, I'm the only one. I can do this. I'm going to do this. It's not about you, Joe.
I know. How familiar. You know, Trump said, only I. I mean, we should start calling both of them dear leader.
I just wanted to bring up something because it got mentioned briefly, which is the Marist poll, right? The Marist poll says 48-48. That is in a two-candidate field, and it's registered voters. Okay, not likely voters. And if you scroll down in the poll and you get to the full field, it has Biden losing.
Consistently.
Yep. It says they're competitive among registered voters in a multi-candidate field, but Trump is winning. Among voters who have an unfavorable impression of both candidates, Trump is winning. So this is not the top line is misleading. Trump is probably, first off, this isn't swing states. It's not likely voters. And so it's a misleading poll to begin with. But if you were to snag the headline and say, see, you know, Biden is still fine. He's running neck and neck with Trump. It's not true.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people who are feeling really, really misled by both the representations of how this race is going and also by the folks around Biden who did not disclose some obviously, you know, fairly significant declines in his mental acuity. Which is not a criticism. It's normal with aging and stress and all of those things. So, it does strike me that there's somewhat a responsibility with the people around him to try and convince him. And it's really, I think the writing is on the wall when you've got Obama, who apparently knew about Clooney's letter to the New York Times saying that he should step aside. You've got basically the loyalists in the Democratic Party pretty loudly saying we need someone else in place. And I do think he's going to step aside next week sometime.
CNN today, right now, headline says Pelosi and Obama expressing private concerns about, the president's fitness to go forward. Even polls are not enough, even if they are, swing state voters, likely voters, because with an incumbent president, with the record he has against a super flawed candidate and the existential issues like the Supreme Court on the line, he should be markedly ahead.
Yes.
That's the part that really bothers me.
Exactly.
Being neck and neck is not enough here. He needs to be further ahead.
And it shows you how bad a candidate Trump is.
Right. And we've blown the, on the Democratic side, massive fundraising lead. It's been blown. Trump raised off those trials, and now Biden has less in the bank, $91.6 million versus $116.6 million at the end of May. I know we're different
says
now.
Says a comptroller.
Yeah.
She's on the numbers.
And March, there's still plenty of time to do this. I hate this discussion of there's not enough time. We can't. There's a procedure.
Look
that
at
you
France.
Can go through. Come on now.
France got it together in a month. The what I'm concerned about is, as March mentioned, Biden is doing some decent fundraising, oddly, after the debate. I don't know who would have watched that debate and sent in a donation, but a bunch of people did. But this week and next week, Biden is spending $50 million in swing states to raise his credibility. Don't be burning through $50 million. Let's save that for Harris or another Democrat. There are ways to transfer the money. The data point that concerns me the most is no incumbent president has had such a low favorable number and went on to win. the favorability number for President Biden is below George Herbert Walker Bush at this time, below Jimmy Carter, below Trump the last time he ran. So if you're looking at the fate of incumbent presidencies and what their favorable rating was, Biden is below. And, you know, I really rely a lot on the analysis of David Axelrod, who helped get Obama elected and who seems pretty level-headed. And he's a numbers guy and he's very responsible. And I really appreciated his work during the Obama administration. He has said consistently now that if it's Trump versus Biden, it will be a landslide. Trump will win, and the Republicans will have the majority in the House and the Senate. So that's why you see Nancy Pelosi and, to some degree, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries trying to take the wheel of this car that is going over a cliff.
And she went on to MSNBC. I mean, that's speaking directly to Biden, right?
Right. She on Morning Joe?
She was on Morning Joe. Yeah. So, I think that was very intentional. She's a, you know, a brilliant political, you know, navigator. And I think that was very intentional. Now, she didn't say he should step down, but she
came pretty close.
Yeah.
And she's a good example. You know, she's 82.
She left.
And she gave up power. She is no longer the speaker. And then she wisely stepped back and she's mentoring newer House members. The really interesting thing is Biden keeps saying, I'm in it. I'm not going anywhere. And Pelosi and others are saying things like, well, give the president time to decide. I'll support whatever he decides. I mean, you don't have to be brilliant to read between those lines.
And if he just looked a little ahead, that word that you used, wise, a wise decision by the president who could lead it all and say, look, I took us this far. We're going to win this thing. We've got a capable vice president who can now take the reins and finish what I started. And yet he's out there saying, well, I know I said I was going to be a bridge president, but things are really serious now.
I like the idea of him waiting until Trump picks his vice president. I'd rather Trump be off kilter and not know exactly who he's running against. I also think making an announcement in the middle of the convention, the Republican convention, would kind of take the wind out of their sails a little bit. I look back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, she was expressing similar concerns. Who could replace me? Well, you know what? We really wound up in a tough pickle now that she didn't step back and allow a replacement at that time. And I think it's a really important lesson to us that maybe we do need to think about age limits on some of these positions. It's heartbreaking to say it. And I also just want to express to the listeners, because I know that there are people on my Facebook right now, like, attacking me probably for saying what I'm saying about Biden needing to be replaced. This is not easy to say. All of us who are saying this, it's incredibly painful to do it. And it comes at grave risk. And we're doing it because we feel like we have to.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a quick break. Digest that, will you? And send a letter to panel@wamc.org. We'll try to get to some of those letters after these words.
No, no, another hour. And when we're about to quit, then we get back on it. This love is sweet and sour. We're stuck in this beautiful mess. What is it about you?
9:46 on a Friday morning. It's the roundtable panel on WAMC. That is Betty Smith. Boy, she sounds good. And it's called Good Thing, that new album. It's posted, the playlist, rather, on WAMC.org/roundtable. We're here with Judith Ank, March Gallagher, Heather Mulligan. I'm David Gustina. And you are the listeners. And Leslie writes, we'll correct her, Heather. You ready? Heather indicated President Biden did not support Vice President Harris last night. He did. He said he picked her because she's qualified and praised her a number of times. Were we watching the same press conference? Before you defend yourself, she did not actually say that. She was pointing out the flub that was made. But he did say at some point, I picked her because I think she's capable of being the president.
Yeah, and my point was he had an opportunity to do a lot more to pump her up, to say positive things about her. And during the Q&A, he kind of avoided that. Actually, what he said was, I'll step aside if it shows that she, you know, she is the only person who can beat Trump. He didn't come out and clearly indicate his support. And I think that it was a real missed opportunity.
Well, but you can see why. Again, that I'm not sure I'm really going yet. I'm not going to go that little extra step. This from Shiloh, millennial here. The fact that Biden yesterday said that he was not going to relinquish the nomination to a new generation was a huge expletive to young voters. I've tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, but the attitude that he is the only one who can do this job reeks of entitlement and narcissism. Time to say goodbye, Grandpa. Give up the keys and let someone else drive before you wreck the car.
I just want to jump in and just say one thing, too. One of my 20-somethings yesterday insisted on showing me a YouTube commercial that JFK Jr. has put out showing him like doing chin-ups and working out, and he's super buff and fit. And
oh, yeah, he's done a number of these shoots.
And he's like, that's who I'm voting for.
I've got Gen Z kids, too. You know, I have a 24-year-old.
RFK.
RFK. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
24, 21, and 19. And they, you know, have an elected official in the family, went to a Democratic school. They're all going to vote, but their friends are not going to be motivated to go to the polls for the ticket the way it is right now. And we need young voters if we're going to win this election on the Democratic side.
It's hard enough to get them to go out and vote. And just this attitude we saw in this letter is what I see from young people I know, not only college students, but nieces and nephews. They don't like this at all, and they don't understand why someone at this age can't step aside. Well,
and young voters are extremely concerned about how President Biden has handled the Middle East and Gaza, as am I. And I was disappointed that he did not get a question on that in the news conference last night. I mean, we're talking about his prowess on foreign affairs. That was a big omission. And then young voters also pay attention to climate change.
Oh,
so you've got climate, you've got Gaza, you've got age, and a lot of young voters are either going to vote third party or stay home. And young voters did turn out for Biden the last time because they were so horrified by Trump.
And they sort of recognize something about the world, that we want to treat each other with dignity and respect. Right. We want to avoid wars if we can. And we want to make sure the planet is preserved for them and for their children and grandchildren.
And just look around. Hottest year on record. Wildfires, flooding,
floods,
tornadoes, hurricanes. I mean, it's if you're not convinced that we're in a climate crisis, you're really not paying attention.
Well, I mean, for the kids who are motivated to vote on climate issues, they are going to look at RFK. I mean, right? His that's been his wheelhouse, really, historically.
Although he's gotten a little weird lately.
Well, he's always been weird.
Weirder than usual.
One of my sons, I'm not going to say which one, I said, well, you know, there's the whole worm in the brain thing. And he said, well, I hear it starved to death. And I was like, oh, boy, that's...
I mean, that's a thrown-away vote. A third-party vote in the system that we have now, this two-party system, is a wasted vote. And it really is a vote for the other side.
Yep.
We're not going to the polls at all.
Well, people I know in New York, well, it's a blue state, or it's a... You know, I don't have to do that. I'm not going to do that here in Massachusetts. You know, Biden's going to win. I'm going to do my conscience and what I want.
Well, Biden's going to win our state, and the way the Electoral College vote goes... anyone who votes for someone other than Biden, historically, their vote doesn't count. So, I mean, that's...
But then, at least, though, people are... They're going to show up and vote down ballot.
Right.
Vote for... You know, the entire state legislature is up this year. I think the reason you see some members of Congress speaking out is because, you know... Don't believe Joe Biden when he says they're not paying attention to polls. Every elected official has their internal pollsters, and they see Democratic support cratering. So even I'm not encouraging young voters to vote third party, but I do want them to vote so they hit the down ballot decisions.
I'm concerned that if they're not on, you know, the top race hitting that Democratic line, then they may skip down or just you know, vote RFK and then walk out. I don't think it ensures that they're going to go down the column and actually do what needs to be done.
I think one of the reasons you saw quite a few Democratic members of Congress in New York come out early and say he should step off is because they've seen the polling numbers. And obviously, New York is now a key state in control of the House. And if they don't pick up some seats, they're gonna stay in the minority.
Yeah, I think Pat Ryan was the first to forcefully say in New York, because Nadler did, and then he walked it back. And then we had Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado call, I think in a very convincing way, call for Biden to step down, which is significant since Governor Hochul is such a visible, adamant supporter of Biden, to have her own lieutenant governor take a contrary position. I mean, they said that he gave her a heads up. Well, giving a heads up is quite
at
different,
least, right?
Quite different than coordinating, because that's embarrassing when you're the national, you're trying to be the national spokesperson defending Biden and your own lieutenant governor.
Well, you just
steps
wonder.
Aside.
I mean, he came from the House. He has a relationship with that delegation, with the Democratic delegation in the House from New York. I wonder if he wasn't asked, you know, to do this basically to insulate some of them from the criticism that you saw Axelrod and some others get when they called for Biden to step away.
I mean, they're taking that position because they absolutely feel like they have to.
Yeah.
It's not it's not done without great thought. It's based on the numbers and it's based on what they predict the future is going to be. And the future looks really bleak without this change. So I noticed on Pat Ryan's Twitter, X, excuse me, and probably most of our listeners don't
like
look
the
at
bird.
It,
we like
but
the bird.
Just him being hammered comment after comment, I'm never going to donate again. I'm never going to vote for you again. And I think that's really unfair. I think that he made a choice that he felt like he had to make, that his hands were tied, that he's really speaking for the future of the country in that decision. And I hope that those people that are really angry right now will overlook that and realize that, you know, both Pat Ryan and people like Antonio Delgado are taking positions because they feel like they have to for the health of the country.
I think it helps Pat Ryan. It shows that he's independent. He's listening to voters. I'm still very disappointed that he's against congestion pricing, but that is for another day.
From Scott, I have enormous respect for President Biden. However, regardless of his ability, the narrative is focused on his age and fitness, and nothing can change that. There's virtually no chance he can win this election. He needs to step down with dignity and allow a younger, more vital candidate to shift the focus back to Trump. The clock is ticking, and this needs to happen quickly. I'm seeing a lot of letters like this, and there are just a ton of them here. Here's one from Carolyn. Has anyone asked what led Biden to have a full neurological exam in February? As he said, exact same white hot light needs to be shined on Trump's mental competency.
That's true.
Well, he knows what a tree is.
They both should have comprehensive neurological exams and release the results to the public. Neither of them are willing to do that.
We shouldn't even be in the place where we need it. I mean,
but we are.
And I just want to say, like, we can talk all day about, well, but Trump is, you know, he's terrible on foreign policy. He's crazy. He's whatever. And this plan, he's going to be all these awful things. But there's zero chance that he's going to not be the candidate. There is an opportunity to put a better candidate who is more likely to win against him.
Heather, you're right. It's an opportunity.
Right.
The Democrats should see this as an opportunity.
When people argue with me about Trump is terrible, I know that's why we don't want to take this risk. Biden is too risky. And Biden will make the point that, well, if I step aside, I need an assurance that another Democrat can beat Trump. I think that is a false narrative, because what'll happen is voters have been saying consistently for years that they don't like either choice. So if Biden steps aside and whatever Democrat emerges, I think there'll be unity around that candidate. There'll be excitement. People will see, oh, the Democratic Party actually listened to my concerns and I have a new opportunity. And then that person will increase in the polls, in fundraising, inherit the 1,000 offices, I think, the Biden campaign has around the country. You can transition to that. The notion that we're frozen in time and you just look at Harris's numbers or Sherrod Brown's numbers or Senator Kelly's number, insert any Democrat with a pulse, give them the next few months to invoke some excitement and get people paying attention again.
We have a deep bench of talent. What we don't have on the Democratic side is courage to bring them forward. Mm-hmm. You know, what would be incredibly strong is to have Biden as the advisor to the new administration or to serve in some role in that administration that capitalizes on his amazing experience both legislatively and in foreign policy. I think we really need to throw everything up in the air and look at what could we do here. You know, what about a Harris Buttigieg ticket? What about flipping the ticket, making Harris first and Biden second? And then if he wasn't able to take that on, having somebody else there.
That ego would never allow that.
No, there's no way.
We're not the Green Party, March.
I do think if it's not Harris, that's going to create an additional problem. Right.
So we have to look at the VP candidate for Harris.
Yes and no, except remember the DNA of Democrats. They don't like to be told what to do.
Right.
And I think there should be a mini primary. Let Harris earn it. And then I don't know if that many Democrats will throw their hat in the ring, but some will. And have like town hall meetings, have public debates, have them release the results of their physical. And let the delegates decide at the convention.
We'll have to wait to hear what you've decided about our discussion until after some news with Ray Graff. I think we get NPR news. No? BBC news? No? None of it. It's just you, Ray?
Local.
God, this is great.
It's AM radio.
Let's go
music.
To Ray Graff in the news. Hey, everybody. We're back with the Roundtable panel. It's a Friday morning, 10:08 to be exact. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue today. And with us on the panel is Judith Ank, March Gallagher, and Heather Mulligan. Boy, have we been talking during the break, haven't we? I think we've solved everything.
We came up with a dream ticket.
We have a dream ticket.
We did a whole other show. Too bad you didn't hear it.
I don't know how Manchin ended being mentioned in there somewhere.
Well, but, my view is any Democrat except Joe Manchin. That's where I draw the line.
Well, maybe we could talk about this for a minute. What would be the dream ticket here? Now, you could say Kamala Harris, you know, she gets put in at the convention. And who becomes the vice presidential pick?
We were saying we need somebody with foreign policy experience. I don't have a good person in mind. I do think that there are other unifiers, people like Buttigieg, who people are very warm to and who's had a lot of experience now in Washington at the, you know, Department of Transportation. We talked about on the break as a joke almost, you know, Liz Cheney. I mean, I think that would pull a lot of Republicans
That's
over to the ticket. I don't think Democrats would ever get out of their way to do that. There are just
would
people who are
that?
Hardliners. Would she do it? I think she would do it. If she knows it's going to save democracy, she would do it.
I think Beshear, Kentucky, I mean, he really managed well through some very, very existential crises in Kentucky. He's a very popular Democrat elected in a red state. I think he's got a forward momentum, and he's super popular right now. I mean, the advantage of it being this late in the day is it's less likely that there's comprehensive, although I'm sure the Republicans have done some comprehensive opposition research. But, you know, as far as like, have any of them ever shot a puppy? I don't know. Is that something?
And boasted about it in their book.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that it's a huge advantage, but there probably is some small advantage in the fact that, you know, it hasn't been known for a long time that these are folks who are potentially running for office.
They can do vetting pretty quickly, and
yeah.
you're going to have to tell potential candidates, is there anything in your closet? We need to know now.
You better tell us.
Yeah, tell us now, or you're in big trouble, Mister. I mean, you know, my instinct, of course, is to go with an Elizabeth Warren or a Bernie Sanders, but I'm not. I'm not, because we are in a crisis moment. We need a moderate Democrat who will bring
George
the party
Santos.
Together.
Oh, wait, no.
I was thinking, I liked the names batted around, but Sherrod Brown from Ohio, uh-huh. he wins in Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to give up his seat, but I would argue it's more important to win the presidency than an Ohio seat. I must represent our friend Teresa Bourgeois, who has been a big advocate for Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona.
We've seen some of that in the letters today.
Yeah. And Josh Shapiro, the former attorney general, current governor of Pennsylvania. It's a swing state. I mean, I would go, look, I'm a person who always votes for the losing candidates because I in the primaries because I vote my heart more than my head. I am now terrified. I will vote for any Democrat except Joe Manchin. And we need to get this done quickly. Heather, you were on with me and Joe the day after the debate, right?
Yep.
And we said, give Biden a little bit of time. He needs a week or two. And he got the NATO meeting. You couldn't do much in the middle of NATO. Okay, it's now been 15 days, not that I'm counting. And tick, tick, tick. It is, you know, there's not a lot of time to get this process worked out. I mean, there is and there isn't. Yes, we have until late August when the convention happens. But you've got to recruit staff. You've got to do fundraising. Biden needs to step aside within the next week. I agree with Heather. I think he will from reading the tea leaves because Pelosi, Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries do not want to lose the House and the Senate.
And if Obama is wavering?
Obama's talking to Biden behind the scenes. They have a complicated relationship.
I know.
Remember, Obama advised Biden not to run because he was too old. And
that was when Hillary Clinton ran and Trump ended up winning.
Right, right, right. So it's a complicated relationship. Obama doesn't speak a lot about their back and forth, but you know, I have to believe that Obama wants what's best, not just for the country, but for Biden. And I'm astonished that Biden's family is pushing him to stay in because it's just an embarrassment.
Yeah, why have that approach when a more sensitive one could benefit everyone?
He wants to be in, and he's using his family to backstop him on that point. And I think they are just trying to support his wishes and probably believe him when he says that he is the only one who can win. I think he believes that up to this point, and it's going to take a lot to convince him otherwise. I want to throw Gretchen Whitmer's name out there. We skipped over her, and I just have deep respect for her. She turned both houses of Michigan blue in a very, you know, complicated purple state. And that's my point, is we have an incredible bench of talent. It's not true that we don't have anybody. We do. We have a lot of people that could, you know, run a successful race and really take the country in a strong direction. A colleague of mine who's in Ohio got really mad with me for saying, you know, I thought there should be a change on the ticket. And he said, you know, I went to the primary and I voted for Joe Biden. And I voted not just for Joe Biden, but for the administration he brings with him. He has a talented group of people around him. Look at Trump's advisors. Look at who Trump would appoint. Yes, I know all that. We know all of that. But we are still choosing a candidate who's going to represent the ticket and ultimately be the commander.
I would just point out, I mean, some of these advisors around him are the same folks who concealed the fact that he was, you know, experiencing some decline. And to me,
shame on them.
Yeah, shame on them.
There's a bit of a reckoning there I don't think we've seen yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're all leaking now and there's all sorts of text chains. When the books are written in a year, we're going to see not that the media was complicit, but the people around Biden withheld information from the American public.
Not only that, they gaslighted reporters who were trying to get it.
And gaslighted us as if we didn't see the
our
election.
Our own eyes. We looked with our own eyes.
March, I have the same family dynamic. My husband has been saying for a year, Biden is too old. He's going to lose. So in the beginning, I would fight with him. And then I would just not engage. And he was right. And I was wrong. And I just didn't know how bad it was until the debate.
Yeah, I would just say that my dynamic is not only do I always pick the loser, but I almost always with authority state that, you know, well, there's no way Hillary Clinton is going to be the candidate, or there's no way that Joe Biden is going to be on the ticket.
Or Donald Trump.
Right. And there's no way Donald Trump is going to win. Right. So
it was a joke in the beginning.
And I talked to a really smart political operative type. I love talking to political operatives because I'm not one of, I'm just a policy wonk. And after Trump won, I asked him, how did that happen and how did we not see this?
And they didn't expect to win.
Yeah. And he said, Judith, have you ever watched The Apprentice? And I said, no, never. He goes, that's why you didn't see this. It's the top-rated show. He created a fictional character. You're fired. People think he's good at business.
Yeah.
I am in a bubble.
How? How do these people only see The Apprentice, but they don't read any information about this guy? He's been in our culture for how many years? We know who this guy is. It's been
Central
all over
Park
the place.
Five.
I can find one documentary after another about this guy, and I can find any article anytime I search about him. But yet, you only remember
but
The Apprentice?
But people don't have time to read. They're not reading articles, and they're not watching documentaries. We're in a soundbite environment. We're in a TikTok world. If it's not under, you know, a minute in video or just a quick
It's
pass,
even beyond that, too. I mean, there are algorithms that you, the thing that you click on, you get more
right.
of, right? So you're getting
right.
more of those documentary or references, and the people who are watching Fox are not hearing about.
Because I'm trying to do my job as a citizen, which is to pay attention to the important information in my society, and we haven't done that en masse with the American people.
I've clicked on one Taylor Swift tweet, and now my feed is filled with Taylor Swift.
You're a Swifty.
I am, and the football player. And I'm
Travis Kelce.
Yeah. And I am just
inundated,
and I watch them now because they're such a cute couple, and I need to be distracted from Biden's saga. I never signed up for all these Taylor Swift tweets, but that's how my newsfeed is going.
Taylor Swift is not voting for Trump. By the way, there was a great soundbite last night in what Biden said. You know, control guns, not girls.
Yep.
That made my eyebrows go up. Me and my husband looked at each other. It was kind of the first shining light of a real candidate, it felt like.
There was one.
In that present
but
moment.
You know, he had this moment of rage, of an outburst of like anger just on that, on the guns issue. And it was bizarre.
Uncomfortable.
It was very strange. It seemed like unhinged almost. And I just thought, like, what?
What is it made going? Sense to me because I feel like he's drawing a stark comparison between where the Republicans are at on gun control versus where the Democrats are at and how this is a public health issue and it's a leading cause of death for young people. And it is an outrage. It is a good reason to be yelling at the podium. It's just because that's the only moment. It seemed strange.
Yeah, it just seemed so
and
weird.
It, to me, it, you know, if you had a different candidate at the podium, they would be hammering a bunch of these issues with that same enthusiasm and it would have come through in a different way.
Right. But you didn't see that range of emotion for the whole rest of the discussion. So it just, it really stuck out as sort of unique.
It's all come at the worst possible time. Well, listen, guys, you need to explain to Jane. She says, go ahead, Dems, replace VP Harris with a white man. See how many black and brown voters you tick off.
We're not saying that. I just speaking for myself, if you want Vice President Harris to be the nominee, it is in her interest to have a little bit of an open competition as opposed to Joe Biden handing it to her. And there are other candidates of color that could be considered. But I think it helps Kamala Harris's legitimacy as the standard bearer if it's not just handed to her.
It would also help her legitimacy to be as being the next president if she's actually the head of the ticket, because I think we all know it seems very unlikely that Biden will last a full term. So we are electing President Kamala Harris one way or another if she's on this Biden-Harris ticket. And I think it would legitimize her presidency to actually run as the head of the ticket. I want to say I've been deeply offended by comments that she's the DEI candidate.
Mm.
You know, this is somebody who's a former senator, a U.S. senator, attorney general of a state.
Prosecutor.
Prosecutor. You know, she has mad skills. It may not be the normal skills. You know, those prosecutorial skills, as we said a moment ago, are not common in the presidency. But lawyers are. 50% of presidents have been attorneys. I think that it's wrong. She wasn't selected as the VP candidate for that reason in my mind or in my experience. So I found that deeply unsettling. And I think black and brown voters would be horrified
if we elect a fully white ticket. And I think they have every reason to be, because we're going to be a majority-minority country any second right now. And we have incredible talent in the black and brown community, and we need to tap that. So,
and don't you think, March, young people today don't have the hang-ups that all these other people have. So the idea of a woman and a woman of color would be welcomed among young people. It would bring more people out in the presidential year.
I also think that the views on her change dramatically if you watch her debate Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is a good debater. She showed her chops.
Right, with Pence,
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, she's got some really good abilities, and it would be a whole new ball game for Trump if he had to debate.
Oh yeah,
and it may work in her favor that Biden gave her some ugly jobs to do while she's been vice president. Because, you know, people want to try to poke at her. She's too liberal, but yet she went down to the border and said, "Everybody go home."
It was a rough assignment. She didn't really deliver much, but I think Heather is right. I mean, my memory, it's very limited, of the VP debate of Kamala Harris versus Pence. My memory of that is
the fly
for Pence, and for her saying, "I'm speaking." You know, she did not want to be interrupted by Mike Pence. Where is Mike Pence in all of this, by the way? No. Don't answer.
All right. He's hoping to get more books sold.
But if you're going to be Trump's vice presidential candidate, you should talk to Mike Pence about what that experience is like.
One idea I had after the debate was, what if Biden stepped down before the end of his term, and then Kamala Harris would be the first black woman president of the United States, even if she wasn't the candidate? I think we really have to think about all options being on the table. Of course, keeping in mind what we can actually bring to the ballot legally and where the money goes. You know, we don't want to let that campaign money go. So we have to be thoughtful about it.
Well, she can inherit all of Biden's war chest straight up, because her name's on the ballot. If it's someone else, if Biden agrees, and is he forced out or does he agree to go out? If Biden agrees, the money can go to the DNC. Mm-hmm. They can reappropriate it, or he can refund all of the donors and they can decide where they want to spend their money. But all of that takes time. And that's why a week is a month. And yeah, there's time, but, you know, putting together a nationwide campaign, it's not really nationwide, it's swing states. You know, they got to, and you can't assume that Harris or other Democrats are just going to go entirely with the Biden staff. And certainly, I think the Biden core senior staff all need to go on vacation for the next 6 months. And if they're Catholics, they need to go to confession and they have to write the book and explain to us why they allowed this level of political malpractice to occur.
Ask yourselves, who am I and who am I called to become? Well, listen, this is very interesting. It's from Amy. Letters come into the roundtable at panel at WAMC.org. Lifelong Democrat here, regardless of how you feel about polls. If Biden stays in and possibly wins, Trump and his supporters would revolt because of what the polls are saying and all the Democrats currently stating he can't win and the fact that it was stolen the previous time, right? And I added that. A Biden win at this point would start a revolution.
Trump's going to do that with any Democrat who wins.
If it's a huge landslide?
Oh, yeah. We have to buckle up. There's going to be a huge, violent reaction from Trump and MAGA if any Democrat wins.
Democrats play by the rules, and that has been very constraining. And I'm not suggesting that we break laws, but we need to think bigger than that. You know, we need to get serious about things like expanding the Supreme Court.
How about just having security on the Capitol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would help. Republicans have played this very long game. This has been a 20 to 25 year playbook. It's
years,
chess to checkers here. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels. Chess to checkers.
Well, Mandy is speaking a lot like I would speak. That she's literally parroting what I would say. At the risk of sounding like an old curmudgeon, I'm tired of hearing that young people are unhappy with the candidate choices, so they won't vote. Life is not perfect, nor are the candidates' choices, but if you don't look at what life would be like under Biden or Trump and vote for the future you want, imperfect may it be, you can't complain about it afterwards. Considering young people have the most at stake, such as climate change, human rights, and control of their bodies, I'm dumbfounded by their willingness to participate unwillingness to participate in deciding their futures.
The problem is young people are not satisfied with what we have right now. The military-industrial economy, you know, the way we're handling things in foreign affairs in Israel and Gaza. So it's not like they can look at the Biden presidency and go, this is better than that. They're saying right now we're not invested in the current structure that we have. It's not working for us. And that's why you see people, young people in particular, saying, I want to just blow up the system. I personally am not a blow-up-the-system person. I've always worked from the inside, and it's very hard for me to understand that. But what I'm seeing is young people who see the writing on the wall in terms of climate change, and they are willing to go to extraordinary measures. And doing something that's going to keep the status quo is not palatable.
Great.
To them.
Well, then, you know, you elect Trump, and you see what happens to climate change then. Well, they're not thinking of who the closest person is to their values.
Right.
Well, but you're okay. You're scolding like a parent, right? What happens when you scold a teenager? Do they just immediately fall in line and do what you want? No,
they walk out the door.
They walk out the door. They ignore you. They do the opposite. So I guess my point is, I think we need to acknowledge that the young people really do not have a voice in government right now. There are very, very few. I mean, the Senate, the average age in the Senate is like the oldest in history. I don't think they're wrong to
Mitch
be
McConnell.
But you can't walk away.
Well, okay, fair enough. But yelling at them is not going to entice them to come participate.
I'm going to ground them.
No, you're not going to ground them. What you're going to do is you're going to listen to them, and you're going to acknowledge that some of their concerns are valid, and
done
we're going to put some people in positions that are reflective of their values. And we live in a world where you can't disagree with anyone without being canceled, and both parties are guilty of that. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's true.
Yeah.
There, and we need to stop that. We need to listen to different opinions, acknowledge them. We don't have to agree with them, but acknowledge that there might be some value.
You might be missing something here. I agree with everything the young people say. I am with them. I am not with them when they say the answer is to do nothing, to not vote. Ah, pox on all your houses. No, the Democrats are closer to your values, and that's what we have right now. And this will pass. At some point, this will all pass.
I disagree. I think they're frustrated with our inability on the Democratic side to take a hard look at what we are presenting and to recognize that we are not meeting the needs of the future with the presentation of candidates
right.
that we have. And they're correct. What choice do they have? If they step in line like they did in the last election to support Biden, we're going to continue to do nothing to meet their needs. That's the way they're seeing it. So I understand where young people are coming from, that they're saying, I want to blow this up. I want to stay home. I want to see change. And right now on the Democratic side, we've not shown that we're willing to listen or that we understand where they're coming from.
If you tell a lot of them to go out and vote, you're going to see a lot more support for RFK Jr., I think. I think that's what's going to happen. And what does that mean? That means Trump probably gets elected.
So what am I missing here? How am I being so mean? I'm agreeing with everything they're saying. And then you're shaking your heads because you know where they're going to end up and then telling me I'm not respecting them. I respect them.
If you respect them, then change the ticket.
Yep. Agree.
I've said I want the ticket changed. I'm just saying, if it doesn't get changed, the answer isn't to blow everything up as a result of your disappointment.
If it doesn't change, then they are going to feel like, see, we aren't listened to. It's just the same old thing over and over again. Democratic leadership doesn't care about the future.
Well, you know what? I'm so sorry we're not listening to you. They didn't listen to me when I was young. They didn't listen to you when you were young. Just study the political system and understand how it works and then know where you fit in it. Don't just go around saying you're not doing it for me. It's not about you as an individual. It's about us as a country. Stop this. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
That's what people are going to say in my direct messages. Stop saying that Biden is weak. You're hurting the whole process. How dare you say that? My point is like, look, I'm a low-level elected official in a totally blue state. My opinion on the federal ticket is not going to really matter in terms of what happens nationally. So I'm one of the people who can say something.
We got to go. Sorry, we missed the BBC. Go.
Addiction's embarrassing.
10:32. I'm sorry, we missed the BBC. That's my fault.
It's our fault.
That's my fault. You know, this stuff happens.
It's an important day in national news.
England's got their own issues they're dealing with right now. They're
doing better than us.
We'll stay with us here in the States. It's the Roundtable Panel. I'm David Gustina here with Judith Henk, March Gallagher, and Heather Mulligan. I have been scolded. And I'm accepting it. I'm accepting it. Young people,
we scolded you to stop scolding because it doesn't work.
We love you, young people. Keep believing what you believe because what you believe is the right thing. It's just hard that when people get older, they get a little cynical, they get corrupted, and they often do the wrong thing.
Well, the challenge is young people being so cynical and so unwilling to engage in the political process. That's what I'm really worried about. Is we have a whole new generation of smart young people who've lived through COVID, who do not want a second Trump-Biden campaign. And, you know, they care about issues, but they're pretty cynical about public service, about what government can and can't do, not interested in, you know, applying for a job at the EPA or the State Education Department or the Labor Department or, God help us, fixing health care. I mean, I have a colleague at Beyond Plastics who said to me, she used to work on health care, and she just finds that so unfixable. She's now working on plastics and climate change because there's a chance of changing there. I mean, we need our best and our brightest coming out of high school and technical schools and colleges jumping into public service to help us solve these issues. And this political climate that we are in with COVID is really turning a lot of people off from any interest at all in public service.
Well, and you have to believe. You have to have faith in these systems. And it's not just the political system. The justice system, the educational system, right? The environmental collapse because of the way we do industry. I mean, you can see why everybody is so cynical and why young people are upset by the way things are run.
It's really hard to participate and be engaged when you lack hope. And actually, this has been a debate at my kitchen table. You know, my husband feels like, well, we didn't have hope. We were worried about nuclear Armageddon. You know, we were worried about these other things. But I think it's way more pressing right now. We're not saying it's a far off, this is a maybe. We know. It's coming.
There are deadlines.
You know, people just died in floods in Vermont from Hurricane Beryl. Like, we have these substantial changes happening right now. We can see them before our eyes. So it's not just something far off in the future. And young people today are facing unbelievable challenges that we didn't face. Plus, we have huge inequity. I mean, look at the increase in housing prices versus wages. It's been incredibly challenging for them. And it means that, you know, they just want to shrug. Look, we had people come out. We had 8 years of Obama, right? Okay, we had this horrible term with Trump, but then we brought Democratic leadership back. But how are their lives improving? How is hope for the future really improving for young people?
Yeah, and having to deal with that pandemic was something I had so much sympathy for them, especially college students whose life is to be social, to be with each other, to learn in that environment. And many of them were lost, not only those relationships, but lost information, lost learning time.
Well, and we sent them permanently into their phones, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and it, as long as your phone has got an algorithm that sends you what you want on TikTok, as long as government doesn't take TikTok away, you're going to get to see just what you want to see. You're not gonna get a balanced view. And I think the media, honestly, the news media that covers Washington, I think are on both sides so biased that my son last night asked me, he's like, where can I get like just a neutral news source? And I'm like, C-SPAN. That's it. You can watch hearings.
You watch, you decide.
Yeah, I love C-SPAN.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
But really, you know, and he's an intelligent kid, grew up in a very political household. I don't shy away from answering questions about what my view is, but I always tell them, like, you need to go figure out for yourself, you know, who is most reflective of your values. And so, of course, he comes back to me with this video of RFK Jr. looking all buff and working out, he's like, that's my guy. Look at him, you know. So but the thing is I can't he's interested, at least, right? Mm-hmm. At least he's interested. I just really worry if we can't, no matter what, if Biden stays on the ticket, I think Trump becomes president. Absent mm-hmm. some other change, mm-hmm. You know, maybe next week the Republicans will do something and take Trump off the ballot. I highly doubt it. I wouldn't want to know. There's got to be someone making odds on that. But
one of the institutions we didn't mention was media. Mm-hmm. That really is it right there. If it's in the Bill of Rights and we're supposed to speak truth to power, and we're supposed to hold everyone accountable, and now through the Trump administration, they've been called fake news and enemies of the people and go get them and knock them down and all that kind of stuff. And people are struggling trying to figure out what is verified information that I can trust. That perhaps is the biggest problem we have
and right now.
And
AI.
Well, and that's just a brave new world.
The Justice Department issued an alert last week about Russian television using bots to influence electoral coverage.
And which we knew anyway, right? Yeah. In our heart of hearts, we already knew that was happening.
And Cambridge Analytica did that during the 2016 election.
Yeah, and it's just getting worse.
The difference between
there was a story on probably NPR, one of the news outlets a while ago about a headquarters of a Russian bot, you know, warehouse of people who are working in Florida, you know, sending out misinformation about the elections.
Apparently the head person is a former U.S. police officer, I think, who went over to Russia and is running their operation over there.
Great. Well, that is going to be, I mean, Putin wants Trump to win. Netanyahu wants Trump to win. This is going to be in full blast over the next few months.
That should be a sign to us. One big difference I see between Democrats and Republicans here is Republicans should have been calling out their candidate for his infirmities, for his lack of character. They weren't brave enough to do it. And on the Democratic side, we can be criticized because some of our elected leaders are calling out the problems with the Biden candidacy. But at least we have the guts to call it when we see it.
It's amazing to me when I talk to legislators, Republican legislators in New York, even the head of the party in New York, and they will not say a bad thing about Donald
They're
Trump.
They're afraid of him.
They will not say
that. I
they say, well, he says.
They say him to Heather, though.
I've had a different experience, but
I'm saying publicly.
Either party should be patting itself on the back for you know, being the transparency, you know, let's do what the, you know, we need to run the best candidate. Neither party can wave the flag on that one.
But what are the Democrats going to say about Biden's character?
Well, there's a parallel. I mean, during the Trump presidency, so many members of Congress would speak off the record and say Trump is terrible and then publicly praise him. Now, in this moment in time, there are many, many Democratic elected officials who privately say Biden has to go. We're going to lose everything if he's our candidate. And yet only, I think, now a dozen House members and brave Senator Welch of Vermont. Go Vermont. Thank you, Senator Welch. He's the first senator, to say that Biden respectfully needs to
step aside. And that's
what
I was saying. The legislators I speak to in New York over the air will not say anything bad about Trump. Now, I get it. But, you know, you are in New York. Are you really in jeopardy?
Well, you are because of the doxing and the, you know, the physical risk. But I think we're up to 20 House members.
20 House members. Good.
Speaking out.
But it gets easier the more, you know, as more people raise their voice,
it gets
easier.
And it depends who the House members are. I was disappointed that Nadler walked it back because I think he has some real credibility. But the Connecticut, is it Congressmember Hines, who's on foreign affairs? He spoke out last night. He's a very credible voice.
Here's a great one from Sherry. Kamala made Brett Kavanaugh cry during his confirmation hearing. She can do the job. How about Mike? As a Gen X person, I absolutely get millennials' point of view. Why do we only use words like disenfranchisement or phrases like vote boycott in other countries? Not voting is not doing nothing. The Democrats are as beholden to the oligarchs as the Republicans, but for a few outliers. Those Democratic values exist on paper, but not in reality.
But at least Democrats are not rallying around Project 2025. Let's really look at what that is. It's going to
Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, forget abortion, forget IVF, forget public education, forget environmental regulation. You know, it is a crisis looming before us, and Democrats at least have a platform that has hope for the future.
I just think that people who are college age, or I mean, I'd say young people, people under the age of 50, they all have good cause to be skeptical of both parties. And I think, you know, it's time for us to really take a hard look at what do we need to do to restore the credibility of both parties. Mm-hmm. And I think that's healthy. And
absolutely.
I personally, two-party system, I'm like, give me 10 parties or something.
Yeah,
but I know that's a radical move. And the way our elections are built, it's geared for a two-party system.
Well, New York City did ranked choice voting, and that was in effect the last mayoral race. There's public campaign finance reform that is now in effect in New York, where candidates running for state legislature can get some pretty generous matching funds. Those systemic changes matter, and I think will give people more choices, and there'll be more competition.
And you need to move those out of blue states and take them nationwide. Yeah.
More letters coming in from Tom. All the left-leaning smart young people I know in my neighborhood will not vote for Democrats because of the war crimes inflicted upon the women and children in Palestine. Listen to them.
That is a very dominant viewpoint, and it is a legitimate one.
Did you see AOC lost the DSA endorsement?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But not the New York City DSA endorsement.
Correct.
That's the one.
Still, it was gravely concerning. I was like, oh, I have to go read the DSA platform to better understand what these people
are
actually
about. And didn't she also support Biden staying in?
Yes. She was very fast, like 5 years ago, 5 days ago, feels like 5 years, supporting him. And, you know, 3 days ago, it really looked like Biden was staying in. I was very sad 3 days ago. Now it seems like it's shifting. And this is, if Biden stays in, this is what it's going to be like for the next, you know, few weeks, few months. He's in, he's out.
Marlene, I was one of the million persons who demonstrated in Washington, D.C. in January of 2017 after the election of Donald J. Trump. There were so many young people I spoke with who were ashamed of their lack of participation in the 2016 election and vowing not to sit out elections again. People should be aware of the consequences of what they do. I'm so sick of Biden, the DNC, says Marion, telling us who our nominee is. I didn't have a choice during the primaries, along with the majority of Dems who didn't want Biden to run. Should have listened to us. Now I don't want Biden to pick a successor. I know there can't be a direct election, but delegates are engaged politically and have a pulse. They can consider all options. If it's Kamala, it needs to be a choice based on her performance at a series of debates and speeches. Judy, you mentioned this, and all the necessary considerations about demographics and swing states. If she is coordinated by Biden, she will be in a very weak place.
Yes, absolutely. So people who are saying it has to be Harris immediately, let's think through the next few steps here. Does it help for her to be the handpicked Biden replacement, or does it help her to have a little bit of a vigorous debate? There's no reason why there can't be televised town hall meetings, like a really collapsed schedule. And then delegates go and they imagine that. They vote their conscience when they're at the convention.
And you can do it
on
C-SPAN.
No, there's an obligation to do it on CNN.
After
that debate. And you know, I'm still looking for the articles. Joe Donahue said that the rules were that the moderators could not fact check during the debate, and that Trump insisted
right.
on that.
The other person will fact check you. In other
words, and that never
happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big deal. Okay. Well, we're running out of time. You are listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. I can't thank the listeners enough. Many who wrote in already today at panel@WAMC.org. I leave it up to you, folks, to give us the schedule you'd like to see in the next week or a couple of weeks. What would you like to see happen in this presidential race when it comes to now, currently, for the moment, President Joe Biden? Heather.
Go England. You said England was down in the dumps. They're in the finals, in the Euro finals, and they're playing Spain. They're probably going to lose to Spain, but go England. I am going to dodge your question. I don't know.
Well, what about England and the Labour Party? Is that a sign that things could go that way here?
And the Labour Party spoke out on issues, increasing minimum wage, improving health care. Biden has to drop out soon. We've had 2 weeks. He's had time. He's got the NATO meeting over. He's got to drop out, and there needs to be a mini primary where competent Democrats can raise their hand in a short amount of time, have a mini process, and then Democrats rally around whoever is selected. But 2 weeks after that debate is enough time.
We can't limp through the next few months the way that we are right now, right? We're going to have to coalesce. And if we don't have a change and the type of format that Judith is talking about, then we are going to have to coalesce around the candidate that we have, which means that we are voting for President Kamala Harris, because I don't think that Joe Biden is going to make it 5 years from where we are today. And I think we all know that when we watch him. We have senior relatives. We've seen people go through it. So, you know, I would prefer for him to be upfront about where he's at and for us to nominate a candidate that is really going to lead the ticket and then lead the country for the next 4 years.
That's Marge Gallagher, the Ulster County Comptroller and the former president and CEO of the Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, along with former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College and president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck, and of course, CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Mulligan. March, Judith, Heather, you guys are awesome. I can't thank you enough for putting up with me. I know I scolded the kids, but they're going to do the right thing. They always do in the end. And we can't thank you all enough for being a part of this radio station where we can talk about issues in a reasonable way to get at the heart of problems we face. It may not solve any of them, but it's a much-needed resource. And for your expertise, we can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
See ya